other members of the IDC, of the department itself, for the understanding and the short notice you were given that we were delaying this meeting until 9:30 officially, and as you see, it is only occurring at 9:45. Am I right? More or less. It was for a very important reason. We had called on members to make the input into the trading industry docs, you will remember. And some were a little bit late, but they were important points that needed to be considered. And obviously the administration doesn't simply want to slap in, cut and paste and this sort of issue. So they needed to consult myself on this, and we also needed to check some very important facts in this regard. So that when you leave here today, you do have what we would call a working document to look at in trade before the finalized, you know, the actual adoption process is, when will that be, Mr. Herman? The adoption of the trade is later today. And that includes input from yourself, Mr. Moreira, Honourable Moreira, as well as Honourable Njikalana. I did not see any, I must say, from COPE, and I say that. We also had one or two that Honourable Nabenia had given to me beforehand, points that she wanted to see whether they were included or not. In fact, they have been. Other than that, we had no other input from yourself. Of course, we had, when I say Njikalana from the ANC, of course, we had those inputs. So thank you very much, thank you for your patience. And before we move on much further, we need to just indicate to those of you who may not be aware that one of the National Lottery Board members, Mr. Ovid Chibungu, passed away a week ago. And I think his funeral is probably this Saturday. I'm just looking at the written for confirmation. And I know he will be sorely missed. They've had a couple of workshops, a couple of meetings where he has already made valuable input. And I think on behalf of the committee, I'd certainly like someone to second that. We would certainly wish to convey our condolences to his family on that note. Is that in order?
No, I do move, Committee Chair, that on behalf of the committee, the card and flowers, you know, be organized so that they are sent to the committee.
Right. Is that all right, then? Yes. Yes, Honourable Adebi.
Thank you, Committee Chairperson. I also concur with what Honourable Martha has said. But I also add that if possible, those of our members of the Postal Committee who are resident in KZN, if possible, if they can attend that funeral, it would be highly appreciated. And then see whether it cannot be funded by the committee budget. Simply because, you know, Mr. Chaban was very dynamic. Although he was not schooled in the true sense of the word of the formal education, but he was able to grapple with the issues that affected people, in particular in the rural area. When I spoke with Professor Nebutanda, the chairperson of the board, he also concurred that he provided invaluable support and direction to the board itself. So I think that he will be solely missed by not only this committee, but by the people of South Africa as a whole. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Yes, Honourable Kamalu.
Thank you, President. Firstly, I must say I'm not too sure of the communication between the chief and the chairperson of the board in terms of the funeral information, because after I received the message that the comrade has been late, the board member, recently after the message, I also received the additional details on Sunday, which was just a shock to everyone because it was very soon. that you know, we could not attend because, I mean, you passed away from the Monday, it's not Tuesday, and the very Sunday that followed a funeral activity. So I'm not too sure whether there is anything, but this is what I said. I'm not aware of that information, so the committee secretary will pursue that to clarify. I'm sorry. I also want to indicate that Honourable Van de Westhuizen is in hospital for an operation, and we would certainly ask our committee secretary to see that we communicate in a card our best wishes for his return, for his successful operation, and a return to good health as speedily as possible. Is that in order? Thank you. We've had many members of the committee who have not been well, but who are making a sterling effort to be here, and I say this to IDC because some of the members are really not well, but when they knew you were coming, they wanted to engage you on some serious issues themselves. So I do appreciate it to those members who are not feeling 100%. We are also with us here this morning. We have members of the Economic Development Committee who are also in attendance. I am just looking around because some of you are both members of, you know, members of both committees, so it's difficult sometimes to know in what capacity you're sitting here. But put it this way, you're always here first then in trading industry, but also, of course, you may be wearing your second hat and others only that hat. Can we leave it there then? Thank you. I want then to just welcome more formally Mr. Quenner, the CEO of Industrial Development Corporation. We are very pleased that we still have a relationship with yourself, and we hope to learn a little bit more about it this morning in this engagement. I see that I'm just reading them in the order that they are given to me. Mr. Christopher Zale, who's the senior strategist, just indicates who you are. Ms. Jeanette Modisi, the divisional executive, human capital and support services, and Mr. Hilton Lazarus, head chemicals and allied industry. Right. And Mr. Nimrod Zulk, the DDG in this area, but also, I understand, who has position for DTI on the board itself. So he should be well aware of issues pertaining to this. Members, you yourselves have said to me, let's move away from all of these long presentations. That was your, I think, constructive critique recently. So given that this is a constructive critique, and also given that we did ask, say to IDC, specifically, this is the area of our engagement, IPAC, development finance, etc. And I don't know if the whip wishes to add to that. We would hope that the input you make to us today would simply take you 15 minutes with a focus in this area. And I look to the committee either to lengthen that and take it to 20 minutes or for them to proceed. They would like Mr. Quenner to be taken briefly with the document highlighted in this direction. Are we all happy with that? Thank you.
Chair, thank you very much. Thanks to the committee members for affording us an opportunity to come and share the committee from our perspective, how we see IPEP and how we see that we will contribute to successful implementation. 15 minutes, Chair, is fine. The document has been circulated, Chair. Could I just Highlight, we will have one slide, and apologies for that, that I added yesterday, which will, when we get to that, I will highlight which the committee members and yourself will not have, which just highlight some of the examples of the things we've done in the committee. I thought that would be useful for that. And also thanks to Nimba for supporting us. The relationship with this committee chair will continue. Even though we report to the Economic Development Minister, because in our minds it is very key in the DTI space, but also particularly in the IPEP, which we're talking about today. From where we are in the first slide, we see IPEP is a very strategic initiative which, for its success, it tries to coordinate activities of the different government departments, not only departments, agencies, but all other state-owned entities, where if that coordination, when that coordination is successful, our ultimate aim of creating jobs and contributing with poverty eradication will be a success. But also we see this as an initiative which ensures that there's alignment within the different departments and institutions, but also on the policies. I mean, the issue of public sector procurement, I think, is very evident in the document, I think, which is a good thing, which development finance institutions also have to play a role as far as that is concerned. But also the sectors that have been highlighted in the IPEP, to us, they bring that balance in creating and developing and growing new sectors, but ensuring that the industrial base is rejuvenated. In terms of the areas which have been highlighted, which IPEP is covering, in this slide, we just identified those that have been IDC as a direct impact on industrial financing, corporate development finance institution, but also as far as the procurement, through our own activities, through our own funding, we can be able to leverage that when government procures, so that we ensure that local manufacturing happens. Also in the area of competition policy, where the Competition Commission will play a role, but with IDC, with its investment in some of those company that has tendencies for to have monopolistic behavior, that we can play a role through our own investment. But also there's a number of sectors which have been highlighted. In fact, almost all of the sectors that have been highlighted, IEC has a direct impact. Our contribution on all of these sectors, we have sector-specific plans, which we will, on a high-level basis, just mention those, and then I'll give an example of one, because we have detailed plans for each and every one of those. The sectors, the metal, the green economy, downstream minerals, biofuels, and all of those. But also on the industrial financing, there's always a challenge to IDC that we continue to find concessional funding so that we can be able to pass that benefit into the industries that, or the businesses that we want to. As far as the approach is concerned, I think this initiative assists us in that we will have to do things from starting projects ourselves. There's two examples, and the example which I will share, where the internal project development, where we do the research, we do the scoping, we raise the funding, we implement the project itself, and ensure that it's fully commissioned. So where IDC takes that role as of an entrepreneur or such, but also when some of the entrepreneurs come through the door themselves, so that there's an alignment with those entrepreneurs. So as they come through, we ensure that their intentions are indeed aligned with IPEP, and that when we help fund those, that when we help in terms of either the product or the market development, that we are comfortable that they are indeed in line. So what is this doing for us is that technically we should be able to engage with people coming through the door, because that's responding as and when without that proper alignment, and also, as I said earlier on, but for IT to take that role which where we start some of these interventions. In terms of the different areas, some of the initiatives that we have, as I said, we have for each sector that we've identified. For example, in the green industry, I mean, there are specific interventions where we're looking at renewable energy, we're looking at manufacturing, so we're looking at the whole value chain, not only necessarily just but one part, so there's a conscious effort to say, let's look at the whole value chain. If you look at metal and fabrication, for example, basic metals, on the automotive component, so that our activities really talk to it. So we've developed specific interventions, but also what we've also done, within these, we've highlighted some of the constraints, so we would understand that there will be constraints in certain specific areas where we would want to be able to, those constraints to be overcome so that we can be effective as far as that. I mean, if you look at the chemicals, for an example, we have specific interventions in the liquid fuels and the beneficiation of the feedstock. We have IDC is structured, the operations unit is structured into strategic materials, which Hilton Lazarus, for example, is one of those individuals who heads a business unit. He is the chemical unit. So some of those interventions we have in plan. For the slide, it shows examples. On the textiles, the intervention is in two prongs. One on the existing clients that we have over a billion rand in the textile industry, and we know the challenges that is going through this, but also to ensure that we pick up some of the incentives or interventions that will assist in ensuring that people who are in the industry or also who are coming in can find it much easier. For an example, we're managing the program which DTI is putting funds aside to assist IDC to manage it. But also we have a modernization program which IDC itself as BMR, on the agro industries, we have those particularly on the grain and so on the advanced manufacturing and also on the forestry. So we have those specific interventions, because we know as a country we need to plant more trees so that we can ensure that we don't have the log problem that we're experiencing. But also there needs to be that cooperation between ourselves and some of the government-owned entities which happen to own some of those, for example, SAFCOC, for example. So as far as the cultural industries and the tourism industry, other areas which now we've seen that have been developing, for example, medical tourism, where IDC is also looking at playing a role there, but we're also looking at other types of tourism, or other than just the hotel establishment which we've done, where we were also invested over $1.5 billion, I think, in that adventure and sports tourism. In that particular instance, for an example, we're working with the local government as well. So that also talks again to the cooperation that you had in the very first slide. But also, we're looking at the industrial infrastructure, the electricity, water, and transport. The next slide, which is an example, this is for all those areas that I've covered. We have a detailed slide like this. I've picked up the chemical one just to show the committee what we do. So where we would have industry goals, we have the IDC goals to ensure that those are aligned, and we look for each part that has been identified in IPEF and develop key strategies for those. For example, on plastics, we have a key strategy there, but also we would also look at the constraints that we would have to overcome so that we are able to ensure that we are successful in implementing this. So some of those would necessitate that we engage either with government or any regulatory bodies or any other players, or even in some cases bring in the private sector. So as we develop these strategies, there is that interaction. So for each and every of those, I would repeat, I mean, we have something. We have not included all of these. before that would be submitted to the committee, but we can make that available to the committee before requirement. This gives the committee a sense, I mean, and we also have time frames as well in terms of when we would want to see that we make that significant progress that we don't have it, ensure that it's aligned. The next slide, which you will see on the screen, is a slide that you don't have in your text. Okay. There in this slide, what we're doing is to show some of the large examples. I mean, I've spoken about the strategies what we're trying to do, but there are some of the transactions already that we've approved and that we're developing. And for an example, as far as the solar generation is approved, for some of these, we have to do feasibility, which is looking at solar generation capacity in the Northern Cape, looking at the thermal and photovoltaic, but also there's a number of other projects that we're looking at in terms of generating capacity. We've approved 60 million as far as the bioethanol in the Eastern Cape, as far as the aquaculture, which is also a sector that is identified in IPEP, about 34 million. As far as the metals and machinery, where we've approved 45 million to women-based business of upgrading to metal rail coaches, which talks to the metals and manufacturing part. And also there's a medium-sized company where we've approved 30 million and the manufacturing vaccine for the power station, so this is talking to the power there. And there's a number of other companies. So this is just to give you a sense of, say, while in other sectors we'll be developing strategies, we'll be studying, but there are areas where we've already participating. That is new. And then there will be other existing investments which talk to ATEC, which we have done in the past. But over and above just the funding, the providing of the finance, as far as the implementation of ATEC, we also provide input into the policy development. We have a certain information unit which closely works with the Department of Trade and Industry, where in terms of terms, in terms of steps, in terms of information that we would gather in the industry, we would share that, and also our thinking in terms of how best ATEC can be implemented. So that we provide that insight, from where we are, we found it. It has become useful for the ETI to be able to help refine and finalize the project as far as this is concerned. But also, what we will be doing over and above that is that we're helping build capacity of the other DFIs, because we realize IDC cannot on its own be able to do all of this. So it is important that particularly the local DFIs and the provincial DFIs have that capacity so that we can also play a role. So we help provide a bit in terms of risk management, a bit in terms of corporate governance, or in terms of due diligence, so we help them and ensure that we support them so that we're in areas that we don't cover as IDC, they'll be able to be well equipped to do this. And also there are instances that I highlighted some of DTI is asked us to manage, but we do manage some funds on behalf of government which are targeted for specific interventions, and we see those as also a good tool to ensure that ATEC is successful. So we play a fund management role to ensuring that we assist as far as that's concerned, where DTI would have fund earmarked for specific interventions, for example, in the textile industry that I highlighted. But also for the SMEs we have within the IDC, where we support them post-investment, because I think it is important to realize it's not only the funding, really. I mean, it's the support that you must provide to the SMEs to ensure that they continue to be sustainable beyond the period of the loan. We've also said, I mean, there are some critical areas for IPEC to be successful, that means as far as IDC and One is really just the agency in the implementing location. I think if all of us, as I said, government, different departments, and other policy makers, don't appreciate the agency in this implementation, I think there's a danger that this good piece of work might not be realized its full potential. So I think the agency as far as the implementation and the collaboration, but also bringing in the different spheres of our society, including labor movements. I think that collaboration is very, very important as far as we're concerned. But also, what we also allied to is that we need to be conscious of what government itself, as far as the capacity it has, that we need to be conscious that the government on its own would not necessarily be able to fund this. That is why we also go out and raise external funding to ensure that we are safe. But we also allied to the fact that there are some of the external sectors which we don't have control over in terms of the world economy. For an example, if some of those sectors rely on exports, in those markets where there's a slowdown, it has the potential of slowing the speed in which we can be able to implement, because those markets will not be. We've seen it through the recession here, where some of our companies that have been exporting to Europe in particular, and to the US, where they're experiencing but also, we know that in terms of, for this to continue, that coordination and that alignment between the different industries, the different players, is very, very important. And the communication to us, we find that it is key, that constant communication with the private sector in particular, so that we can see that there's a role that they can be able to play. But I think without the private sector, it's going to be difficult for government and any own agency to do it on its own. So that constant communication is important. One of the other critical areas is the public sector procurement. I think we can't overemphasize that point, because I understand whenever there's pressure for different areas of government to perform, if we don't pay attention to the public procurement, it might have the potential of undermining it, where people would rather go and import things as opposed to help develop the pressures locally. So that I think that's one area. I think this point has also was made in different forums already. The other issues of conditionality, which is something that we also allied to, when people access IGC funding or DFI funding, I think those issues of conditionality, it's important that the DFI put them up front for people, whether it be local procurement, creation of jobs and all of those conditionalities. But also the issue of regional approach, I think it is important that we also conscious to the fact that there's a bigger region here, not only South Africa, but SADC in particular, and Sub-Saharan Africa is an area where we can be able to benefit from that cooperation within the region and take advantage of what. As far as the funding of IPEC is concerned, I think the IDC is still sustainable. It's got funding, but we would need for us to be able to operate at high levels. I think over time we need to look at recapitalization. But what is important is that for us, which is the pressure we put amongst ourselves, is that continue to find concessional funding is something that is one of our priorities, so that we can ensure that we can be able to pass that benefit. We are still self-sustaining. If we look at the next 5 years, we will advance over 100 billion. But for us to sustain it beyond that period, I think it is we'll be cooperating with the DGI to look at issues of the capitalization. But our balance sheet is still well under geared, and we will be going to the market to raise more funds. I mean, we had a private placing with the UIF, where we made available will create new jobs and will save existing jobs. So we'll be looking at the number of policies. So in summary, Chair, we see IPEP serving both goals, and it addresses areas that are critical for the development of this country. Ourselves as IGC, we are aligned with the activities of IPEP, and we see ourselves that we will do more to ensure that we, as far as public development and funding, to ensure that we support the player role in those sectors. And we will continue to provide input through the BTI launching and the economic development as far as the policy making is concerned. And I think we are clear that the success of IPEP will rely on all the players, coming together, and the coordination among all the players, I think, will ensure that we ensure that we are successful. So, but in the short term, Chair, we will continue to seek cheaper sources of funding so that we can be able to pass that benefit. Chair, I will pause there. This has been a high level from India, and then we will, I'm sure, engage with the committee members. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Clennon, thank you very, very much for a very succinct input there. Gives us the opportunity to do a proper engagement on the issue. I think all members have just received the extra page, which was distributed separately. Thank you very much. What we'll do now is ask members to try and remember that quite a few members want to ask questions and make comments, and let's not speak for 5 minutes and so on. A couple of minutes and you'll get a second tranche. So let's have, by show of hands, those who wish to raise comments, questions. Right, starting on my right here, the Honourable Andresini, Honourable Murray, Honourable Hadebi, Honourable Mabasa, Honourable Kotsi. I'm just trying to see who's behind Honourable Hadaj. Right, in that order, please.
Thank you very much. Madam Chairman, I rely on your assurance for the sake of that, and I will ask only two questions. And to you, Madam Chairman, to the presenters, thank you very much for a clear presentation and for the exceptionally good work done over the years, of which I have an enormous amount of appreciation. And I put this forward because I wish to ask you two critical questions, which is unfortunately my self-designated role in this committee of being the difficult customer. There are two accusations which have been labeled to you from, the IDC, from some of the inputs we received during the IPAP public hearing. The first one, that you become an industrial conglomerate, which is escaping under competition rule review. And in your, because you have so much equity of many companies, when you look at applications, it is one of the considerations which comes in whether or not to assist a potential client, whether the business potential client who wishes to develop is going to be in competition with your own interest. And the IDC has now reached a size and a presence in the marketplace that perhaps should be broken down into competing IDCs. This one argument. The second accusation leveled against you is that you have somehow maintained the business model, globally speaking, forged during apartheid. In that you look at an opportunity, you finance it, and then you concretize the opportunity through a relationship with the state, in which you add value to the opportunity by means of anything you get out of the state, whether it's subsidies or protections or special conditions. And I know that this is a wide, it's a sweeping statement which may not which will not apply in the great majority of the cases, but I would like, since the statement has been made here, I would like to for you an opportunity to confront it, because if it were true, there would be a negative cost to have some assistance to the taxpayers through the action that you put forward, which doesn't show on your balance sheet, but it shows on the balance sheet of the economy as a whole and on the balance sheet of the state. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Maria.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My first answer just means that just corporate governance issues. Maybe first, I still sit with this crisis in myself to see, you know, whether it was justified to shift you over to economic development. Because right through your presentation, it was quite clear that majority of the things that you do relates to IPAP and IDC activities, DTI activities, DTI activities and strategy. I don't know if you want to express yourself on that, because I often find it difficult, you know, who's going to be your boss? Who's going to tell you what to do? To whom are you going to report? In terms of this presentation, you know, it is about DTI, but you're going to report to economic development. So who's going to judge you and evaluate you? I still find it very, very difficult to try to ascertain, you know, what is really the correct thing to do and is it the right position for you. Then in terms of right in the beginning, you have mentioned your role in terms of competition policy. And I immediately, you know, when in your response, I said to myself, are you doing this from a corporate governance point of view as a shareholder and as an investor? Or are you doing this, your possible influence on that, as a state tool to influence? What are you saying to us? You know, is it from an investor, so corporate governance or shareholder point of view, or as a mechanism from government to influence? That's the first. The other one is just in terms of your funding or your financing, let's rather call it that. You have mentioned, you know, you're doing industrial financing, and we know that up till now you've based it basically on commercial grants, everything that you're doing. But you've also mentioned that you're going to need recapitalization. You know, to what extent will you go into higher risk loans, lower interest loans, in other words, lower cost loans, and will that have an effect on need to recapitalize via the Treasury and government budget? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mayor, Honourable Khadebe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll also concur with my colleagues in appreciating the input made by the IDC. But, Chairperson, what I'll go through is straight on the issue of the presentation itself. I appreciate the fact that the IDC sees the agency on implementing the issues of IDC. So the question which I'd like to raise is quite linked to what Professor Chang said yesterday, who said that in creating a developmental state, one of the constraints of South Africa is that it was too cautious in taking decisions and affecting the growth of the economy. So the question which I'm going to raise here is, one, is the mandate of the IDC still relevant when we take into consideration or when we take into recognition the fact that IPF is going to need funding and going to need agency? Whatever. Don't we need to review the mandate of the IDC itself as a company? Number two, on the issue of, I can see that they have dispensed about $60 million on bioethanol in the biofuel industry in the Eastern Cape. The question is, what is the source of that bioethanol? Is it made? Because if it is going to be made, really, in the long term, it's going to increase the prices of maize, of which is going to lead to food insecurity. I don't think that when there's food insecurity, that development. What is it? What type of projects are they going to lend funds when it comes to that aspect of bio ethanol. And then on the issue of their funding of the companies, of the project itself, one of the presenters during the public hearing says that in order for you to get funding from IGC, you must sell your soul. There's one serious complaint that you must sell your soul to the IGC. So how quickly are you going to be able to approve the project as said that this is urgent? And then what models are going to use so that then people can experiment? I think both entrepreneurship is part of being experimental. How flexible are you going to be in order to accommodate the needs of the individual business plan? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Khadebe. Honourable Mabalsa.
Thank you very much, Colleague Chair. No, I'm also thanking Mr. Igena for the input made. My question is, as a country, we have an obligation of pursuing the triple BEB initiative. And that first the last to have come in into the deal. To what degree is IDC helping to address that? Because if that doesn't happen, the inequities are going to stay as they are, especially in racial terms, as well as gender. And then the second one is when IDC makes loans to companies, does it have an influence on the benefit that such countries should do in areas like local procurement? In other words, do you have a leverage? Can you influence that, yes, we are giving you a loan, but the quiet conditions that go with the loan are these, e.g. local procurement, so that it's not just your company that benefits, but even other South African companies can benefit. Then the last one is, what is the relationship between IDC and departments like agriculture and land affairs? I'm picking up on those two, especially with agriculture being one of the areas where the B that I talked of at first should also be addressed, as well as the land should also be addressed, so that I see a department, you know, working together. But I'm just taking that part. Thanks, Colleague Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mabalsa. Honourable Kotsi.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, let me also thank the presenter or the presenter of ITC on this key issue, Mr. Kwena. My first question is about the textile and clothing and leather. When government imposed some tariffs or perhaps import tariffs 2007 and 2008 on the China, there was an agreement that also involved IDC around development of our clothing industry. It does not look like we made use of that time, and I really want to know how exactly are we assisting this industry, which is really, really dying, especially if you look at what is happening in the Western Cape today, and the money that has been, talk about 1 billion already that has been put there. Can we get in details, that a full report, you can send it to us, what has been done to really revive this industry? The second question is the issue of you as IDC. During the public hearings on EPAS, there was a strong view that IDC is not acting like a development bank, is a commercial bank. That was very strong, because it says there is no difference between IDC and these other banks. whereas this is perhaps an area where we think it should assist in also developing. I'm tempted to ask the issue of you being shifted to ECD, but I understand that that is a political decision and not perhaps a decision perhaps that is taken by you. I do want to understand, out of the 800 and something jobs that have actually been put on EPUB over the next 3 years, which means 80,000 jobs per year, most of those are said to be going to be worked around industry, which means that you yourself are going to be very important. I want to know your time frame, besides the government time frame, your time frame in actually being able to reach those targets. For us, that is very important. The last one is the recap. How do you see that government's involvement in actually recapitalizing ICT?
Thank you very much, Honourable Kosti. Honourable Hajjaj.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, thank you for the comprehensive outline. Just a couple of issues here. I see on your slide on beneficiation, you mentioned manganese, platinum, and polysilicon. You've left out gold and diamonds, and we are a global player in that field. And why are we actually not thinking of beneficiating our gold and our diamonds? We've talked about this for you. For years and years, and we're still back in the same square. Why is that? Secondly, the IBC says it's going to advance to 100 billion over the next 5 years. How does the IBC plan to raise this money, and under what terms will you make money available? And thirdly, support for SMEs. Now, on page 12, we've heard that they've failed for over 10 years. What is this? You say you will support SMEs. What does that actually mean? Does it mean that you will assist to identify the gaps? Does it mean that you will create hubs to incubate enterprises that will survive and not suck and die? The attrition of our SME sector, as we know, is very high. Why is that? What are we doing wrong? What can we do right? Because it is critical. We talk of the developmental stage to make sure your SMEs function. And last but not least, on page 13, you said realistic pricing by state-owned enterprises. What do you actually mean by this? Thank you.
Is that a hand? Is it Honorable Kovamba? Yes, it is. Honorable Kovamba, and then Honorable Smart, please. Also, welcome to new member just joining us from the Queen in front. Is that Mr. Dr. Advocate Anton Albert, the legal, not the medical. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I want to also echo my appreciation as well for the presentation. Just two quick comments, and probably the ITC will respond. Listening to the presentation, Chairperson, one does not hear very clearly how the ITC plans to monitor the effectiveness of them financing the any business initiative, whether it's an expansion of existing business or the creation of new industries. I would like to hear that very clearly, so that it's not just a question of dishing out money, but they don't follow through and monitor the effectiveness of the usage of those money, of that kind of financing. That's one. But two, one appreciates, on page 13, you're speaking of strategies and opportunities that must be communicated to the private sector with a view of better, persuading the private sector to come into the party in terms of, funding, largely, I think. But what doesn't come out quite clearly is how are you planning to then make yourself known to the general public, so that people know who you are, what opportunities are you giving to the people, for them to take the opportunities and enter into the mainstream of economic activity. If that doesn't happen, the danger is going to be that those who have been the main player in the economic activity will age, and those who have been marginalized in the past will remain marginalized. Or if they do take opportunities, they will remain, you know, small all the time, and don't enter into the bigger picture. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable
Smith. Chair, I must also take the opportunity to thank you first and the IBC for the comprehensive presentation. Mine is on the identified areas and areas of focus. I don't see tourism, not unless I've missed out on it, as a very important industry. And it's a soft area, very fickle, and quite difficult but easy to enter. And therefore people, that is now ordinary people in the country. And you have many, many people that are getting into that industry. In the locations here in Cape Town and various other areas, I'm thinking here of the Arts Festival in Grahamstown, and I'm also thinking of the 2010, which is on the doorstep. And I'm just saying that I'm wondering where these people will be able to harvest for summer season. The other one is, let me once more, in my mind, in appreciating the input, I am thinking very, very hard that we don't have another institute or institution like IBC in South Africa. It's a very, very important element in the standard of economic development. And therefore, if IBC is not robust enough in terms of setting targets for itself, it means that we will ever remain fuzzy with regard to development and their goals. And I'm trying to in my mind to get crisp understanding of, in a phased way, say within this phase this is what we're thinking of getting, and in order to and the buy into the targets as set out by IPAC. And in that way we are able to say IBC has taken plus or minus 40% and of the targets set out by IPAC. And it's very easy even for an ordinary person to understand and the role of IBC and the impact that it's having and within the country, because the grassroots people, and they are not likely to get into IBC, because there will be other institutions that would get into that. And but if we have targets, we'll be able to assess the impact. And the last one is maybe the public sector procurement. Is there a regulated strategy of ensuring that procurement and is actually within, is also playing and the role? Agro-industry and food security. I'm just thinking about rural areas and cooperatives. Are they within the ambit or not? Especially with regard to the crisis that the country is facing, because there's so much import of food instead of exporting and have surplus. Thank you.
Thank you. I think Honourable Mabasa, we are going to hand over. We are coming back for follow-up because we have already enjoyed close on 30 minutes. for this period. So we're going to hand over here, and you'll notice, IDC, that there was a particular focus on some of the recapitalization issues, and certainly one would want to re-emphasize the issue of the cost of that capital vis-a-vis the interest rate. You could just be a little bit forthcoming and share with us exactly what the cost of capital has been envisaged when you consider lending $100 billion over 5 years. Thank you.
And thank you to the members for the questions. I will, from time to time, ask my director, Nimrod, to assist me some of the more difficult questions. As far as IDC being a conglomerate, because of the role we play, I think an impression might be created that it has become a conglomerate, because we've been very instrumental in starting things, in participating in expansion. But all of that, at least from where we're sitting, I hope we don't behave like a conglomerate whose sole purpose is to maximize profit. I think it's all the development. We, through our own intervention, we fund competing industries. I think it's even in our own mission and vision that we have to fund, we have to promote competition. I think it has gained that as a point which has been asked on the Competition Commission. That role we're playing it as a shareholder and as far as corporate governance. We're not playing it as an instrument of trying to do it. We're as a shareholder, every shareholder would want to see an investor respecting the laws of the land. I think it's important to that responsibility we have. I think it's against that when we see that there's a role we play from some of those investments, because some of them we have equity, as far as we have equity over and above the loan and even quasi. So we encourage competition, so we fund across different sectors. The investments that we have over time, we release that security by selling and then reinvesting them. So there's a conscious effort to ensure that we continue to recycle, loosely we use that, use funds so that we can create more opportunities. So the growth that we see is from some of those investments which is held over time. For some of them, we come in very, very early, so we do pre-feasibility, feasibility, and all of them. And it takes time. I mean, if we're in the forestry industry, for an example, I mean, trees take 10, 20 years, so by the time they are ready for harvesting and for us to exit, it's been over an extended time. So there has been a mix in our portfolio where we've had some of the older investments which have come in terms of dividends and growth, which can enable us to create new industries. And if we take even more risk, we'll come back to the point of saying, are we taking more risk? But also enables us to do that. So as far as we're I don't see us as a conglomerate in the sense that it's been used, but our activities lend us to be involved in a number of sectors because of the, I think one member mentioned that it is very key to the economy, so it leads us to that. We have indeed benefited from some of the investments that we made in the past, but what we have done is we've used that benefit to create new industries. So there's been a conscious effort as far as that is concerned. On the EDD, I'm not going to respond to the question that the, I think one member correctly said that the decision, I'm sure maybe members can venture into that. I think we will leave it at that as far as that is concerned. In terms of whether are we funding on commercial grounds, we're not doing, I see the industrial finance in the entity. We measure our success not only by the returns that we get from those investments, but also by the fact that those investments themselves will be sustainable, but that they themselves will be able to create jobs. I think it is important for us that they themselves have an ability to export that in that process entrepreneurs are created. So when we look every transaction when it comes to us, we say, where is it based? How many jobs is it going to create? What is the potential for a job? If it is indeed going to export, and whether there's any new entrepreneurs. So all of that are an input to us in actually determining, balancing obviously with the cost of funds that we have. Because we also borrow some of the amount. So we go into the international development financing institutions, we go also into the market both locally and internationally. Where we also borrow, which we have to repay some of that amount. So we have to cover the cost of funding. But all of that, the combination of that, and also because we also have the benefit of using some of the growth that we have and some of those investments that we have. So that balance gives us, in a sense, that we can say, okay, for those that create more jobs or save more, or for those that find themselves that are based in the rural areas or in the townships, there tends to be a benefit in the pricing mechanism that we also analyze. If people say we are a commercial bank, I don't think we are. I don't think we want to be. We don't. In fact, what we do, we cooperate. We manage a number of schemes. Where, for an example, in the transport scheme, where we have actually brought in some of the commercial banks, where we share risk with them. It's a position which they find themselves very uncomfortable, but we use the risk sharing. So we don't want to compete with them. Where there's no market failure, we shouldn't be there, and we consciously trying not to be there. So we don't. I don't think we behave. Obviously, when we do the due diligence, I think we unpack it, because what we don't want to end up with is that we fund a entity and then 6 months later that entity is not in existence. I think we're the same. So the due diligence process for us is to say, is this entity that we're funding going to be sustainable? Sometimes we ask difficult questions from the entrepreneurs, and they don't find it comfortable. But I think we also have a responsibility as custodians of the state-owned, of the state fund, that we do a proper job. So if there's any similarity, probably to that level. But I mean, I know some of the commercial banks, they look at the security and that's all that they look at. But we do a detailed job. Obviously, that has an impact on the turnaround time. Question in terms of far as the agency is concerned, and we are alive to that. I think we've always said we don't want to come up with the perfect prescription and the patient has died. I think we don't want to do that. But we are alive to the agency of this. I mean, particularly now we made available $6 billion for companies in distress, and we streamline our processes to ensure that we respond much quicker, for example. So the turnaround time is an issue that even our board is on the radar screen. We need to respond quickly and appropriately. It's a function of the information we get, because we have to be comfortable. Some entrepreneurs give us all the information, and we point them the information that we need, and we sometimes help them, then it's much quicker. But some of them would come with an idea, and when you probe further, it's clear that there needs to be more work, and it has an impact, really, on how quickly the deal can come to fruition. But we work with them. In fact, what we find is our team have even worked even much, much, much harder than ever before in the last two years, where they've gone out of their way to try and handhold some of those decisions, so it's making sure that you can get the right information and not lose probably an opportunity which otherwise would have lost. The issue of the bioethanol, we are alive to the fact that we're not going to support things that will put food security into jeopardy. So in this particular case, we're using sugar beet. So we're not using maize. And I know there was a project in the Free State which used maize, but we're not involved in that. We contract with them. But we also talked to the department. I think there's a question of to agriculture and then that we talked to them. So I think we're aligned to that, some of the priorities. What are we doing on the B of the BBB? We have a number of interventions. We have schemes where we set aside funds where the return expectations are much, much lower than what our normal funding is. In sense that. But also in some of the investments that we've, when people are approached, some of the entrepreneurs would from time to time ask for a contribution to show the commitment
some of those funds that you bring in for the community, particularly when the workers, what we have schemes that are earmarked for the women who wanted to participate in transactions, where we make those available. So we are indeed playing here on as far as the sense beyond the triple B to ensure that we indeed bring the broad basedness of as far as local procurement is concerned, you know, when some of the, in fact, when the two key consultators, Transnet and Eskom, looked at their CAPEX, we did an exercise where we assisted in terms of how much can be procured locally, and we have consciously at the back of that to say which industries can we bring in to the fore to help assist as far as that is concerned. So we are alive to that fact that we need to help bring in and set up some of those industries, which is why I said we need the whole value chain. Because we say some of the things we have to manufacture, because there's no point in us to say people must buy local when there's no one who can manufacture local. Also there's that frustration. So we help, we're consciously like that we help build some of those industries. And also in the process and bringing new on the textile, we can provide information in terms of the areas we have. As far as what DTI is doing, I'll leave that to Nimble to maybe to respond. But also as ourselves, we also set aside a fund for the modernization of. So we are helping some of the existing players to modernize some of their equipment so that they can be able to respond to the new fashions and all of that. I think we put in about 50 million. We put in about 50 million rand where we're helping them to modernize. But we continue to look at niches because, I mean, the textile and clothing industry has been a difficult one. And if we were not the responsible DFI, we would have walked away from it. I mean, some of those investments where we've matched them, or we've looked for edges, we've looked for niches, and together with them, we've seen what interventions can be made. So we realize to that. And the ability that, I mean, this is the industry that also creates jobs which we'd like to sustain. But we do a comprehensive work. The issue of the commercial bank, I think I've addressed it. I don't think we want to be a commercial bank, we're not a commercial bank. But I can understand the entrepreneur's frustration when you ask for the difficult question sometimes. But it's for the good of the entrepreneur themselves and for the IDC and for government, in fact. Because otherwise, if we do have this job, that will be failing. As far as beneficiation, we did not, we play a role in the state diamond trade. I think we've helped establish that on the diamond side. We have not specifically highlighted it, but we're doing something. So where we've really helped the state diamond trade to come in to make parcels of diamonds available to the local entrepreneurs for them to polish and make jewelry. But also on the gold side, we started a gold scheme that has been discussed because we needed the commercial banks to come to the fore with us. So with that one, the scheme is there, but we're still struggling through it to get private sector to appreciate because we need people who have the system which we ordinarily the private banks. Banks would be best suited to that, but it's an area which we will continue to engage. As far as the SME is concerned, the support we have a unit that looks at the providing technical support as well. So when we look at entrepreneurs, say what support do they need? Is it technical, the actual technical abilities, the marketing side, the financial side, or the asset management? So we have a group of people who when we help support those SMEs, we do that. If we find that problem back at the beginning, we share the cost together with them, those entrepreneurs to try and get them expert as far as that is concerned. But also we have a unit which we call Post-Investment Monitoring Department to ensure that, I think the question which is also asked, what happens post-investment, to ensure that those investments are sustained if we want to get. Because we don't want to give the funding and then suddenly those investments. So we've got a group of people who look after and visit those plans. Also, we have now established regional offices in all the provinces. So IDC is present in those offices, although in a smaller scale, because the head office is very far from the people. It's for us, for people to easily access this IDC, but also for that office to ensure that you understand what the priorities in the province are. So they would work with the province as far as their strategies are concerned to see what interventions we can make. On the recap, I will leave that to Nimrod to assist me. I think we note the issue of communication. I think it's an error that we do, but I think there's always room to improve to make sure that people know what IDC is doing and what role we're playing. I mean, if you look at the amount of money that we set aside, I think just over 40% of that will be earmarked for IPEC. So, I mean, it is very important in our lives, and it's something that we take very, very seriously. As far as the tourism is concerned, it is highlighted. What we highlighted really is not maybe the traditional hotels, but we looked at the arts, we looked at the alternative to the medical tourism, for example, looking at the sports activities to try and bring in for people to take advantage of what South Africa has to offer. So we are allowed to it is in here, and also on the cultural side as well. It's highlighted, it's also a focus area of issue. Of course, we are allowed to the fact that we feel the number of our people which are in the rural area than the South Africa.
Let me pick up on areas, selected areas that have been highlighted. On the ongoing relationship between the DTI and IDC, I think both ministers of Trade and Industry and Economic Development have, I think, have briefed the committees on the reason for the shift. But I think what is very, very clear is that there will continue to be a very, very strong relationship between the DTI and IDC in ways that are, I think it's been referred to as so-called walk-in rights. In other words, you know, the DTI retains important rights to interact with the IDC. One manifestation of that, which the chair mentioned earlier, is that, for instance, we retain a position on the board of the IDC. But for practical purposes, we work very, very closely with the IDC, and I think that one can see that, for instance, in the kind of joint program that we have developed in some areas, like, for instance, in the clothing and textile area, where the IDC actually plays an instrumental role in rolling out particular programs on the DTI's behalf. And I'll come back to that when I talk a little bit about what we've been doing recently in clothing and textiles. I think the other important thing perhaps to note is that obviously the IPAC is central to focus the work of the IDC, but I think the work of the IDC is broader than that, so it also extends to other sectors. And so, for instance, in the briefing, one can see that it goes, for instance, into areas like certain areas of high value agriculture and so forth. I think areas that broader kind of areas of the economy that the Economic Development Department would also want to support. Then on clothing and textiles, I think what's very clear is that in the last year, and I think it's been a year now, roughly, since our minister was appointed, we've actually made tremendous progress in the sector in a number of ways. We've been working very, very closely with SAR to ramp up this program to address customs fraud, and SAR has set aside dedicated capacity. They've been doing a lot of investigations, and they have some prosecutions in the pipeline. So that's one of the big constraints of the industry. With DTI and IDC have been working jointly in a number of ways to provide financing for the competitiveness upgrading of the sector, as well as providing financing during the economic crisis for some of the companies in the sector that have been affected by the crisis. And on the upgrading side, we've already rolled out through the IDC, and this is up and running, the clothing textile competitiveness program. This is a program that supports competitiveness upgrading in the industry, both at the firm level, but also where firms want to put in place cluster initiatives. And that program has already received a number of applications and there's been a number of approvals. I think that in the written response we can provide more details with exactly how many those have been and how much. But also what's very importantly, we've just collectively launched at the beginning of this month the production incentive, which is a further boost to the industry, where firms can earn up to 10% of their annual manufacturing value added in the form of a production incentive. And that in turn gets channeled back into the clothing and textiles competitiveness program. And in fact, it's ring-fenced by and large for competitiveness enhancing efforts. So what happens essentially is that firms earn an upgrading credit up to a maximum of 10% of their manufacturing value added. But we've put in place mechanisms that mean that the only way that they can redeem that credit is through doing competitiveness upgrading measures. You know, so for instance, it could be new machinery, or it could be training, or it could be putting in place world-class manufacturing production systems. It could be collective cluster efforts to strengthen the value chain. And these are the kinds of things that will be supported through the production incentive, as well as working capital. So that's a very, very important program, which I think now all the elements are in place to support the industry. I think the third point was the recapitalization. How will that proceed? We have essentially just kicked off a research program or a kind of research to start looking at the options for, and in fact, I don't think we're really talking about recapitalization, but for, let's say, an appropriate and ongoing capitalization of the IDC. And that is informed by some of the observations that we made in the IPAP, that even though there's been very massive private credit extension in the economy since 1994, most of that private credit extension has gone into supporting consumption in a variety of ways. It's gone to things like credit cards, hire purchase agreements, and so forth. Only a very small proportion has gone into investment, and of the amount of private credit extension that's gone into investment, it's been very, very concentrated in largely in consumption-driven sectors and in fairly capital-intensive sectors. So I think what we're looking at is what is an optimal arrangement to try and ensure that there's an appropriate funding to make sure that there's long-term credit extended to the more value-adding and labor-intensive sectors of the economy. So that's a piece of work that will proceed in terms of the timeframes that have been set up in the ICAP, and obviously we will come back and brief the portfolio committee on the on that work. At this stage, I think it's safe to say that we've kicked off the underlying work to look at the matter, and later on in the financial year, we can come back and report on what the findings are that are beginning to emerge out of this work. Then I think the last question was in relation to procurement and the kind of linkage between leveraging public procurement and the role of the IDC, and I think there are very important linkages in which reiterate, perhaps for the benefit of members of the Economic Development Committee, the matter of public procurement, I think, has been canvassed very extensively during the hearings within this committee. And in particular, there's ongoing work between ourselves, National Treasury, and the Department of Economic Development, in the first instance, to revise the preferential procurement policy framework regulations to strengthen the measures to leverage public procurement through that mechanism. We've also indicated in the IPAP that we will strengthen the National Industrial Participation Program and essentially combine that with Department of Public Enterprises Competitive Supply Development Program. So there's significant work that's happening on the procurement front, but that necessarily also, there has to be a linkage with industrial financing. So perhaps, I mean, let me give a concrete example of that. What we know is that in a lot of metros, they're busy procuring buses as part of their bus rapid transport systems. And so, for instance, the Joburg Metro, the first tranche of buses that they bought, there was no local production, no local content. What happened is those buses were imported from Brazil, fully built up. Now, one of the reasons why they were imported from Brazil, amongst others, was that the Brazilians offered very, very attractive financing arrangements, which in turn are linked back to high levels of local content in the Brazilian buses. So in other words, the Brazilian Development Bank actually provided finance to the metro to buy these Brazilian buses. But the conditionality that they apply is that when they extend that finance, they must get these the buses that are imported from Brazil to South Africa must have at least 60% local content. So one of the issues that we need to confront in offering appropriate financial mechanisms, and it goes back to the capitalization story, is we need to be able to at least match the kind of financing arrangements that our competitors can offer on import products. That's one important example, I think, of where we need to see a kind of alignment between what we do on the public procurement side and what we offer on the financing side. I think that covers the question. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, so you just one point?
Yes.
On the, I think the question you didn't answer, on the 100 billion, how is that going to be raised? That we're going to discuss. That does not talk to the capital innovation, Chair. That will raise from our internal funds and combination of us getting into the market involved. And then there's a plan to that effect so that we make sure that we are able to invest to the extent that we
Members, I know there were one or two follow-ups, and some of you felt you wanted further questions, you see. So, in the last round, everyone took at least 2 minutes and some 3 minutes. Can I ask you to restrict this now to a minute, please? So I am going to take that, starting from my right here, Honourable Maria, Honourable Mabasa, Honourable Kotsi, and Honourable Hajaj.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for the comprehensive responses. It is obviously still not clear to me whether it's going to be funded by a budget or via, for instance, the ventures or any other way. And that is the kind of uncertainty that we deal with at the moment that can impact on future budgets. Not from yourself, not from the minister. We don't get that kind of answer. Where is that money going to come from? How is it going to be capitalized? On that basis, you talk quite a lot of sourcing cheaper funding. What are you talking about?
What kind of costs are we talking about? Can you give us an example of where you will be sourcing cheaper funding, and what will be the cost of that in terms of interest rates? Then in terms of where you talk about the agri-industries, again, Land Bank is supposed to be the development finance institution there. You know, isn't there a conflict between you want to be a development finance institution for the agri-industry? How are you going to play a role in regional food security? Because I don't think your mandate is really agricultural development. That is more with the Department of Agriculture and with Land Bank. On your request.
No, if there's a pressing other question, you must raise it.
Madam Chair, the other one that
but let's try to just reduce it.
And the other one that you can maybe respond in writing is also in terms of in the textiles and in the automotive industry. There's more information on how. Because I appreciate the fact that we haven't got time to go into all the details, but how? You know, words are nice, it's very impressive, but how? And just linked to that is also, you have mentioned that extra sheet that you got of all the funding that you do. Have you assured that these are not, you know, called the buzzword, tenderpreneur? In other words, you know, isn't this, you know, I know that this lady that you're talking about is in South River. Now, it's not a huge operation there, but I mean, if that is the woman-owned business, 45 million, it's quite huge for that operation. And are you sure that there's not subcontractors that's doing the work, but she got the contract and the finances? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Yes, let's go on. I think it was Honourable Mabasa.
Thank you very much, Chair. There was a question that was asked by one of my colleagues on cooperatives. I don't know whether I missed the answer or did the answer come forth. Whether there is any relationship between IGC and cooperatives. And then the one that I also missed was the one that speaks to the relationship between ITC and departments like agriculture, Department of Land Affairs, in view of that area being an area where the first B must make an impact, you know, if we are going to get anywhere with a broad-based. And then the last one is there a relationship between IDC and the IDCs of Southern Africa in whatever way they are called, you know, because IDC helps South Africa cannot develop and sustain on its own. In the medium term and the long term, we must see the development of Southern Africa and Africa. Thanks, Committee Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable
Chairperson, I also don't think my question on your target and time frame as IGC, you did answer that. I think for us as members of Parliament as an oversight, that is where we feature mostly in actually oversighting those parts. The last question I want to ask, you mentioned in your input earlier about import fronting. That was another issue during public hearings, and perhaps the plans that we have in curbing that situation that seemed to be rife. I know Honourable Khadele likes that topic, and I'm sure if you answer.
Very much. Is it Honourable a judge?
Thank you, Chair. I'm having a problem, Chair. I find find that in this key sector development intervention with the IDC, it appears that it's seeking to be everything to all people. Because, I mean, there's so many sectors outlined here. And unless one has more detail on each, it doesn't really mean very much, with all due respect. The second thing that was, we're talking about, just an example here, the electric car, the Joule. We have a prototype. How are we going to be able to manufacture these green, so-called green cars? Just an example. Now, we put it down here. It looks very good on paper, but it's a problem. How do we actually do these things? The last question is, Chase, I'd just like to know what was the largest amount that IDC loaned any enterprise, any company? What was the sum? Single sum.
What did you give a time frame for that? You mean the last 20 years?
No. Say, well, since 94. Well, it started later, actually.
Right. I just want to re-emphasize to the IDC that I think, certainly my own question and some of the others, we're really trying to get to grips with the cost of capital in funding, in your funding operation. What? How exactly are you configuring this cost of capital to the beneficiary, the recipient? And perhaps you can link that to a much more detailed explanation of concessionary finance in a written response to us, please. So what we're going to allocate now, at this time, is 15 minutes for the conclusion of this thing, please.
Thanks, Chair. On the funding, let me maybe to some degree, and then we'll come back with the details. For at least the 5 years that we've allocated this 100, the intention is that our equity will go out and borrow into the market and use some of the investments, because we get repayments, we get dividends, and we also sell some of our investments either to the that we have, or if they are listed into the market, so that we have cash that we can release. So as far as 100 billion, the issue of capitalization does not feature in this. But the intention, as the member has said, we're looking at the study, is to take a combination either to ring fence some of that, where you can get it either from sovereign funds or any other player, which we can. That's one option, or it could be that then the state puts in, but I mean, we'll do a detailed work, I think, for us now. But because the point I made, Chair, earlier, if we don't, all the parties, like the government, the other DFIs and other players, we don't cooperate, the extent of the activities that we want to realize for IPF to be successful, we will not realize those. Mm-hmm. And that might have a bearing on when the actual capitalization will happen. So, I've mentioned concessionary funding a number of times. An example is the UIF fund that we have, where we're getting $2.5 billion. So the intention is to find more of those. This is a start with UIF, and I think they are warm to the fact that we, depending on the success of this, then we can go back for more. But we're continually looking for this. I mean, if you look at how BNDES funded, for an example, there's an equivalent, I'll use it loosely, of a UIF, where legislatively about 40% of that money goes to BNDES, so that it can be part to create jobs and other. So we learn from also some of the experiences that we see from all of the other countries, and hopefully we can be able to access them. So that's what we refer to as when we talk about cheaper funding. On the other industries, we are in no way competing with the land bank. In fact, we work with the land
because we look at the value, the high niche, for an example, part of the agro site. They are in some instances, maybe this will also talk to the question on the land bank, where in some cases where people have had land given back to them as a result of the land restitution, where we work with the land commissioner to say what agricultural products can be planted so that that land is used properly. For an example, I mean, we participate in the citrus, exporting of citrus, where we, when people got access to land, we partnered them with an existing player which had markets to export into Europe. So when these people now can plant, and together with them be able to export to all these markets in Europe, for an example, there's one example, there's a number, we've done it with table grapes, we've done it with roses and a number of other. So our activities in the agro industry is that in no way is going to the land bank, but in any land. In fact, if anything, it really complements we will give more info in writing in terms of the how. As I said, that example which I showed on the textile, on the chemical, we have for each and every one, what are we going to do, when, and whatever. So there are proper plans in terms of ensuring that we make that change. We tend to premiums. We try by all means, maybe I'll link this with, to some extent, the funding. We try by all means that which is one of the reasons why we are more detailed in our due diligence, because we want people to get involved, to get their hands dirty, for them to learn as well. So I wouldn't say it's foolproof that we will not make sure that we don't open up, but I'm comfortable that from our best attempts, we don't have tender premiums, but I cannot say that it's 100% share. I think it's always something that we are alive to. In fact, what we do is this import fronting. We do not fund people who are going to import goods without any value add. Yeah, I think that's a clear decision we've taken. We want, because otherwise it might even undermine the manufacturing industry we're trying to build. But on the cooperatives, Mr. Duff will talk about it. We have a relationship with the regional DFI. In fact, we're a member of ATFI. I'm the chairman of ATFI. ATFI is an association of African DFIs, but we also participate with a very strong party in the South African DFI Forum, which is the SADC one, where we play a role. In fact, what we find is we help build capacity on all of those DFIs, so we do causes, risk management, and all of it. In fact, Jeanette sits in the she chairs the developmental part of the DFRC, so that we can help, because we are alive to the fact that we have to work as a region. So it's important for those DFIs in those regions that they have the capacity. We have sent some of our people to some of those DFIs to help them train, and in some cases they've brought people to the IDC to come and learn in terms of how we've done it. Last month we hosted the two CEOs of the DFI of Zimbabwe and Zambia, where they looked at our best practices, in fact, and then we also hosted the CEO of the Tanzanian Investment Bank, so that we can assist them. As far as the targets are concerned, as I said, I think when we share with the members the right and what we're doing, in particular in the sector, I mean, to be clear that there are targets that are set in terms of when we're going to achieve in those different areas that you highlighted. I think we do take note of the comments, remember that they need to be robust, so that it's clear that they really take into account the agency and of what the economy of ours is. So we're comfortable that because of the work that needs to be done, naturally they will be facing. I don't think we will all do them at
Matt, if just coming on two broad matters. I think that one theme that has come up from a number of members is from an for instance, when it comes to cooperatives, you know, agencies like CEDA and so forth, you know, really have probably, you know, a fundamental role to play. You know, again, you know, the land bank has its own very specific role to play in relation to agriculture and land reform. So I think that you know, that part of the concern has been expressed, which I think is legitimate, is that, you know, the IDC needs to be able to remain focused, you know, on the very specific areas that, you know, that it's mandated to focus on. Then I think more broadly, perhaps I could just take the opportunity to make the point that I think there's an immensely valuable role that both committees can play in advancing the collective work of the IPAP and the growth path, and helping with this oversight and coordination role, because there are a number of areas, I think, that both the DTI and IDC really we could do with the assistance of the committee in making sure that there is that coordination. And I can give a couple of examples. You know, one is the CEO has mentioned that, you know, this issue of unblocking the forestry sector, which in turn goes back to fast-tracking of water life. You know, sometimes, you know, the IDC is ready and standing by to invest in those sectors, but it requires a regulatory shift in order to unblock activity. I mean, another example is, you know, for instance, in biofuels. I mean, IDC is very, very committed to the biofuels sector, not in, you know, not in food crops. I mean, many hasten to add, you know, and cabinet has decided, you know, very clearly that maize will not be included because of the food security concerns. But, you know, there's certain regulatory decisions that need to be taken about saying that the petrol petrol companies need to buy up a certain minimum amount of blended of biofuels and blend it into their fuel stock. So there's those kinds of things. That another example might be mineral beneficiation. There's certain steps that need to be taken by the Department of Mineral Resources in identifying minimum levels of beneficiation across these main commodity chains. So I really think that, you know, there's really a very, very strong role that the committee can play in playing that kind of oversight and helping with that role of coordination. Thank you.
Chair, so just two quick ones. One, there's a question on what's the largest sum that we've approved as 94 infectors, just under sum. There's about two projects, which each was about 3.2 billion, but I think that's the largest which we've participated, so individually. In terms of the cost of capital, I think the question has come in. There's a number of questions in terms of the pricing when you're looking at the pricing. You look at what we call the hurdle rate, the risk, and the developmental part. If I talk about the hurdle rate, is the cost of borrowing. When we've gone out and we've gone into the market, we will get probably something at LIBOR plus something or China local. And then on top of that, then we look at the propensity of the what we call the default rate, something there. And then what we look at is how long the loan is for some of them, 15, 20, and all of that. So that's a factor that we put in there. But also then we look at the developmental scope, which is either the jobs, the export, which, as I said, so obviously if you create more jobs, there's more benefit. If you have something in the rural area, there's a benefit between. So a combination of all of those. So obviously, for an example, I mentioned the URF loan, which we got about 2 billion, that's the first percent. So that means the starting base is very low. So then we're able to pass much benefit
Certainly we'd like to thank you, but there are quite a few areas I'm sure you appreciate, Mr. Quinner, that we've asked for you to come back with perhaps a more detailed response in writing. We're particularly interested in, I've said this twice, the cost of capital. To
you know, you've already indicated that you've been going to the market, as it were, to leverage the 100 million. Well, clearly, you'll be paying market rate interest rates there in order to leverage that, no matter how, one can say, economical and competitive the cost rate you receive. Now, you also indicate and link that to recapitalization. And quite clearly, my understanding, implicit in what you've been saying, is that you won't be passing on those same costs to your clients, to those you'll lend the money to yourself. See, I'm just not getting very clear here. If we look at the current situation, almost all stakeholders have said it's the cost of capital in the development. Almost all. This is why I think the committee keeps on coming back here. And I would say you yourself, IDC has accepted and recognized this and appears to be developing measures in overcoming this. And this may mean, as we had said a few months back, you may need to review the mandate. The mandate may need to be reviewed and so on. You know, what sort of organization will it really be? Will it focus more on being a developmental, financial type of institution? Or will it find itself still competing as a kind of commercial funding institution or finance? And that, to me, lies at the heart and the crux of what we're talking about when we talk of the cost of capital. So I want to give you some space to get back, consult and look at it, and come back to us with a written response that's going to assist the committee. You may not be able to come back emphatically on every area, but we do need to get a clearer understanding, because I see a commitment here and I see a desire and a vision here, and I think we're grappling as to the how. That's really what's coming up. On the other one, of course, when the localization, when the location of where IDC is and so on, I must say I thought somewhat differently. It's probably the way different individuals see things. I think to myself, you know, in most South African families, no matter what the constitution is saying, most of the men, if their two partners are acting as the head of their household, but they certainly don't outrank the woman in the decision-making structure or the accountability of the children to either parent. Children that count to mother and father, and not to father alone. So I don't see a major problem on that front myself as a woman. But, of course, my male colleagues may view it differently. I just see us as one happy family, all trying to work together. But I do agree there are areas we may need to fine-tune as to how we engage on the account. But thank you very much. I wish we could have given you 5 hours, but I do believe that this is going to be an ongoing engagement in this regard, and we do want to share with you our own work when that report is written. I'll certainly just ask the whip to have a last comment, Honourable Khadebe. Your final comment?
No, Chairperson, I'll also concur with what you said, that the input was invaluable and the engagement was really enlightening. But the bottom line, as you said, that as far as the question raised, the mandate of the IDC, is it still compatible with what with the circumstances we are in? I think it's something, the food for thought on the side, and see that whether I'm really going to be able to push this economy forward. But as far as we're concerned, we're really appreciative of the work done. Thank you.
We really wish to thank you, Mr. Quenner, Mr. Jeffrey Quenner, really for making yourself available and your team with you and our DDG, Mr. Nimrod Salk, to be here with us today. And just to
indicate to the committee, I regret that your tea break is so short. It will only be 7 minutes before you return here. I don't know if we're all sitting with the same clock. Mine says 20 to 12. Is that right? And we certainly want to get started at 12 again, at, you know, 5 to 12. Thank you. Yes, Mr. Quena?
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to the committee members. I think the engagement is also available for us, and will indeed provide a response to the points that have been made, but I can assure the committee that it is made and is still relevant, but we will provide it. But thank you very much. We truly appreciate the engagement.
And it's tea for everyone.